Dr. and Mrs. Future now on AM 1080 KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome to another week on planet Earth. Beautiful day today, Tuesday, Santa Cruz. This is Future fading down the background music.
Yeah, I was waiting for the Jetsons, but I guess it's just all Moody Blues now.
Moody Blues.
Moody Blues. There are no Jetsons out there anymore.
Yes.
We've arrived in the future.
We have.
Right. Well.
Here we were just talking to Charlie about the history of animation, mm-hmm. getting back to the very earliest days of that. We got back as far as Willis O'Brien. O'Brien, the guy who created the animation of King Kong. It's inspired Harryhausen, who was the next generation wizard. And I was telling him about how I had met Phil Tippett, another generation of animators at Lucasfilm, and on it goes.
Oh, boy, these magicians of the silver screen, huh?
Making our imaginations real. Pretty cool.
That is the role of media. We tell stories because we know what to do with our thoughts. We can turn them into reality.
Well, we can certainly create some fun stories with
them.
Where
it begins. I believe thoughts emit energy. They actually evoke reactions and responses.
Well, yeah, they ping pong around like radioactive particles.
Yeah. Well, and just like sunshine makes plants grow,
yeah.
thoughts make reality grow.
And memes grow ideas.
That's right.
Like
and
the idea
we live
of
inside those ideas.
The idea of creating an animated puppet has evolved since Pinocchio mm-hmm. and beyond.
Right. Absolutely. It used to be people were making marionettes, and now they make films about Pinocchio. And they're working on making virtual realities where you can immerse your senses into games with avatars.
Not just characters, but whole worlds.
Whole worlds.
Animated, the holodeck technologies.
That's right.
Yes.
That's it. Thoughts evoking realities.
So the second hour is going to be quite interesting today. We have a local
author
coming in, Annalise
Schinzinger,
right, who's written a book on the art and science of caregiving.
That's right.
Which is
a
all
very
about
beautiful book.
End of life and the best way to approach it from what she's seen.
That's right.
And tips on how to deal with
there's beautiful end of stories life. With embedded skills and wisdom, and then there's an end of life guidebook with a lot of PDFs that can give you checklists and worksheets, and then there's web pages full of links, and then the website itself is turning into a resource portal for people who are engaged in end of life.
Yeah, fascinating topic,
caregiving.
Big issue, and it's the future of end-of-life work.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, we're going to deal with some other things, like how the head of NASA has issued a meteor warning and calls for the cooperation of the societies of this planet to work together.
Oh, boy, what happened?
Nothing in particular.
Is there a dangerous meteor coming at us?
No, not yet. But they're saying that, he quote, "This is not Hollywood. This is not about movies. This is about ultimately protecting the only planet we know right now to host life." In other words, meteors can destroy an entire state pretty easily. And speaking at the Planetary Defense Conference, NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine warned that the risk posed by meteor crashes is still not being taken seriously enough.
I guess it just doesn't happen often enough. People don't know how to prepare for something that's so iffy.
Well, they're saying they're not rare. They happen. They're typically, big ones will hit. They're expected to happen once every 60 years. But Bridenstine pointed out that destructive meteorites have crashed on the Earth 3 times in the last century. Mm-hmm. Like if you look back at that one that exploded over the Russian city of Chelyabinsk in 2013, it had 30 times the energy of the atomic bomb of Hiroshima.
Wow.
just to give you an idea, injured 1,500 people.
Nobody saw it coming, right? They figured it out just minutes before it hit the atmosphere. And then all those people were injured as it flew by, tore out windows with the sonic boom.
Exactly, yeah, it was big. The strange thing about that was that NASA detected an even larger object about 16 hours after the Chelyabinsk meteor crash. But it approached the Earth but didn't hit it.
Oh, so they were looking for more debris in the tail of Chelyabinsk.
And part of the problem is that they're really dark. They're really,
dark.
And so we're finding that we can detect them better if we look for infrared signatures.
Like, right. We did an article about that a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
About how they're using infrared to see into the dark.
That's because as they swing by the sun, they get a little bit warmer and we can detect them from that warmth.
So we can only detect the ones that are getting close to the sun?
Yeah, the ones swinging by the sun, which are quite a few of them.
Hmm. Does that mean the ones that are closer to Mars and coming towards us are invisible?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We got one direction down.
Okay, right. It's always good to search for things in the light, for sure.
Yes.
We can see them when they're on the sunny side.
Gee, I wonder if there are different levels of cold we could detect. I guess it's the same thing. Infrared.
That's an interesting thought.
Yes, a cold detector.
I wonder what color detects cold. It would be infra-blue?
No, I think it's a matter of... They're probably pretty much close to zero, absolute zero out there.
It would just be a tiny bit warmer than absolute zero.
Not probably the easiest way to detect them.
Mm-hmm.
So NASA has issued this meteor warning and wants cooperation, you know, and we probably should give it to them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Earlier this month, NASA awarded a contract to Elon Musk and SpaceX for their double asteroid redirection test, their DART mission.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're not just sitting still. They're not just making speeches at conferences saying the threat of asteroids is real. No, they're actually funding missions to space.
$69 million. Not a lot, you know, compared to our other satellites.
Sounds like a lot. Hey.
$69 million.
Somebody who's trying to pay their rent, $69 million is quite a pocket.
Well, people trying to pay their rent ain't going to stop an asteroid strike.
That's true.
You know, it'll probably not really do very good for property value.
Then you're just talking about being darn lucky if you're not in the path of that asteroid at the time it hits.
So anyway, this test will test the Earth's capability of deflecting an asteroid by colliding a spacecraft with it at high speed.
I hope that is way far away from the Earth.
Well, they're going after Didymos, which is an asteroid about half a mile across.
Okay.
And it's got a moon.
Oh.
It actually has a moon.
An asteroid with its own moon.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
And we're trying to collide with the moon to see how that affects the asteroid's trajectory.
Wow. Complicated.
Yeah. If you know how to hit the moon right and you calculate your trajectories properly, it's like a good pool game.
You think it's a pool? I don't know. To me, it's a little more like the BB gun at a deer or something. I mean, you're talking about something really tiny trying to move something really big.
I don't know. Elliptical orbits, asymptotic orbits can affect the trajectory of a larger object.
There you go. We're talking Newtonian physics here. We're talking that equal and opposite reactions out in space. Just the gravity that the objects are already grappling with.
Well, if all goes according to plan, DART will launch on a Falcon 9 from Vandenberg in June 2021. October 2022, it'll slam into Didymoon. That's the moon, which is a 540-foot-wide object. And the telescopes will document on how the collision affects Didymoon and its orbit around Didymos. And we'll see. We'll see. Could be fun.
Ditto.
All right.
We'll see. Could be fun. All right, we've got to go to a break.
All right. Talk to you shortly.
Dr. Future will be right back. And stay on the lines. We're happy to talk to you.
Glad to be here until a meteor hits. Not so sure I want to be here.
Well, the chances of a meteor hitting you are pretty slim.
Three times in 100 years.
It's hitting the planet.
Average, yeah.
And then
hitting you particularly is a lot less.
Meteors that we know haven't really hit people. There's been a little bit of satellite debris that hit a person, but no meteors that we're aware of.
Oh, good. Okay, I won't worry about it, at least for today.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if you have bigger, more imminent, pressing fears to grapple with.
Yeah, and things that aren't fears. Mysteries, too.
Right.
Like, one of the big mysteries is how old the universe is. Oh, we got a caller, Ms. Fia?
Yeah, before we talk about that, let's talk to Dave and Salinas. Hey, okay. Dave and Salinas, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine. It's a good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Not raining yet. I have a question that the asteroid or meteorite or whatever it was that exploded over Russia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It blew up in the atmosphere, correct?
Right.
Well, it didn't blow up in the atmosphere. It actually hit the ground, but it flew by. It flew by a town a few miles away from where it hit, and it created a sonic boom that took out windows and harmed people's eardrums.
The Chelyabinsk meteor entered the atmosphere. It was about 66 foot in diameter.
My question is, everybody's worried about, I guess what they call them, MTVs or whatever nuclear bomb that could blow up in the atmosphere that we send up.
Meteor airburst is what they called that one, the Chelyabinsk one, an airburst.
And that one didn't do that because it hit the ground?
No, it was an airburst.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm learning from you.
Yeah.
So how come it didn't take out the electrical grid like everybody's worried about that is going to happen over the United States sometime from some other country?
That's an EMP pulse, I believe. That's a different deal. I don't think meteors necessarily do EMP pulses. That would be caused by something our own species would create.
So it'd be man-made.
Yeah, more. I think to take out the electrical is what you're thinking of is probably a solar activity. Something would happen on the sun, like the Carrington event of 1859 that caused the electronics of the time, which are very primitive, mostly telegraphy.
Copper wires.
Telegraph wires caught on fire and caused damage, but that was solar activity. That wasn't meteor activity.
Yeah, affecting our magnetosphere.
So if we actually have one that comes from outer space and blows up in our atmosphere, that we're not going to be in bad shape except for what man could do.
Unless it's bigger, like the one that took the dinosaurs out 65 million years ago, that triggered a mass planetary extinction that took out most of the life as we know it. So it depends on how big it is and how it hits.
I've seen the plotting of the meteorite hitting the Earth and how big it was and how much stuff it threw in the air.
Right.
I guess that we didn't see sunlight for maybe a couple of years.
That's right. And it also sent fireballs across the entire planet, starting fires in forests everywhere. It was a pretty bad scene. But it did allow us to exist, allowed us mammals to take the lead on this planet after 250 million years of rain by the reptilians. So
did us a favor. If you're really a future-minded person and don't mind what form your soul takes in evolution, you may as well welcome asteroids hitting the Earth.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if I was to be taken out, I don't want to be shot or something by some criminal or anything. But if it's an act of God, I guess you could call it, that's the way I would want to go.
There you go. Destiny.
There's nothing I can do about it. It's just going to happen.
Yeah. Surrender to your fate.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
You bet.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Well, I'll tell you, sometimes it can get kind of wild. I remember I was driving to Seattle when Mount St. Helens blew up.
Oh, wow. How close were you?
I was on the Interstate 5.
And so what did you observe?
Well, on the way up, I saw it smoking, and there were these rest areas nearby the side of the freeway where you could stop and buy a T-shirt with the Mount St. Helens with the plume of smoke coming out of it, and it was all, you know, kind of cool. But then it really blew up when I was in Seattle, and as I was coming back, I could barely see on the road. It was like nuclear fallout or something.
Wow.
And we had to put nylons over our carburetor, you know, nylon stockings over your carburetor and stuff like that to keep it from destroying your engine.
So the air was full of debris.
And I stopped at the same rest area on the way back. And this time there, the shelves that had all the shirts on it were just covered with piles of ash.
Ooh, how deep?
A foot of ash.
A foot of ash.
Yeah, on the shelves and no more T-shirts.
Oh, people got the T-shirts.
Yeah.
Those were the T-shirts to get, man.
Yeah, they'd get the ad. Now, I know some people were trying to sell the ash later. That didn't work out so well for them. But there is always entrepreneurs.
Right. But still, it's shocking. Yeah.
It was like a really bad snowstorm, you know, in terms of driving.
Us mammals of the 21st century are so unaware of how huge nature is. I mean, we think about it and we talk about it and we study it from afar. But driving through Mount St. Helens ash debris right after it happened gives you a much more
you see how
visceral
real this
understanding.
Stuff is. Yeah. Those volcanoes are not trivial, and there's lots of them. And if the Earth wants to create a mass planetary extinction, it will.
That's right. Ancient people called the volcanoes the guardians.
It just will.
That they can eradicate the weather on the planet and zero out all life pretty quickly if there's a reason.
Yeah. We wonder, well, what triggers off these things? We have no idea. We don't have an understanding of the planet as a living organism, not as a whole, not yet. Anyway.
We don't have knowledge, but we have intuition. And faith.
We have a clue.
And science.
We have some clues.
And awareness. And we do have this rather new natural force on the planet called humanity. Like, we can affect the outcome because there's so many of us. And we think so much. And we have tools to increase our effect.
Yeah, no, we do. We have a lot of power. And we'll be having more if we survive. And if we tune in to what is better.
That's right.
That's the...
I think we'll have more, not only if we survive, but if we try very hard to intend to survive and thrive and create planet paradise as we're meant to do.
Yes.
We get what we ask for.
Well, hopefully.
I think so. I think that's how it works.
Of course, you think you're asking for the right thing. Sometimes you get something that you didn't anticipate, but then you think about it and you see it really was what you asked for.
Good point. Aim high.
Yeah.
Aim high.
Another
interesting. Create with joy.
We only have a couple minutes here, so let me get a couple more stories in.
Okay.
Before we go. One is that the universe is younger and expanding faster than we thought, according to a new study.
What if?
Yeah. A new study from a Nobel Prize winner found that the universe is younger and expanding faster than we thought. An astronomer, Adam Riess, he used instruments from NASA's Hubble telescope to conclude that actually the universe is expanding about 9% faster than previous calculations.
Whoa, there ought to be a law.
But the thing is that the scientists who thought up the other calculations are right, too. They're consistent with their thinking, as is these are
so
consistent.
So some of the universe is expanding faster and some of the universe is expanding slower?
No, and they're both calculations seem to be correct. One says we're 12.5 billion years old, the other 13.8 billion.
And they're both right?
Yes.
Well,
yes. How
the
can you
one
that, be?
That says we're 12.5 billion years old is already included in the one that says we're 13.7 billion.
Well, they say it's a new physics that is necessary to explain the discrepancy, that the universe is outpacing our expectations in expansion. It's very puzzling. Maybe we're making mistakes we can't find yet, or nature has something we haven't found yet.
Very likely.
Yeah.
We don't even hardly know how to ask the right questions.
The result of human error is downplayed. It's probably not likely. The mismatch between the two rates has been growing, and it's impossible to dismiss this as a fluke. It's just not what we expected.
Okay.
They're basically measuring different things. One, they're measuring how fast the universe is expanding today as we actually see it, with sensors looking at the expansion. The other is a prediction based on the physics of the early universe and how measurements of how fast it ought to be expanding.
That one sounds a little shakier.
That one sounds like
there's more guesswork involved.
Yeah.
And yet, both of them could easily fit the same model.
Well, there's a strong likelihood that we're missing something in the cosmological model that connects the two eras.
Right.
Today
it makes me think about
this.
If there was a prediction made about how fast a baby would run because of how long their legs are when they're born, and then you start to measure how fast they're running when they're 20 years old, and then it turns out to be different. I mean, there's a lot of factors in between that affect the
outcome. Right, yeah, the legs could have grown differently at different periods of time. Yeah. Well, they're thinking that the dark energy is probably something to do with this.
Oh.
Because we don't understand dark energy yet.
There's a whole bunch to discover in the world of science.
And it makes them both valid. And nobody can find anything wrong with any of these calculations.
This is just scientists being polite to each other. They probably really rather... to say the other one is an ignorant slut.
No. It's a new paradigm. Instead of right and wrong or blaming somebody for making a mistake, it's not about blame. Blame is the name of the no-win game. That's not how modern scientists think about these things. If there's a discrepancy, maybe there's something about we don't understand you.
There's a mystery to explore. Yeah. Way more fun.
Way more fun. Way more true, too.
No need to waste time on blame.
Everybody's right.
Straight to the mystery.
Why are they right? It's a question.
Let's find out after the break.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Now, have you ever wondered what the sun sounds like?
I do. I wonder about that often.
Because we've got this vacuum between us and the sun cutting off all connectivity.
Yeah, and sound needs molecules to come to our ears, right? So by the time it gets to our atmosphere, it's already dead in the water.
But nonetheless, sounds give off subsonic notes caused by vibrations deep in their structures. And we've been studying them. And we've got some sound, a real treat for you to hear our own sun and a scientist describing it. It's a 3-minute piece. I thought it was very interesting, and I thought I'd share it with our audience here.
You ready?
You got that queued up, Mrs. Future?
I do.
Sounds of the sun.
Thank you, Bill Graff, for bringing this to us so easily. You ready?
Play.
You're actually hearing the vibration of the sun. It almost has a warmth to it. It's just enough where I can almost feel the sound on my skin or on my clothes. I imagine feeling the sun, you know, moving next to me. My name is Alex Young, and I am the Associate Director for Science in the Heliophysics Science Division here at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. When anything material moves, waves travel through it. And the same thing happens inside the sun. And these waves are traveling, bouncing around inside the sun. And if your eyes were sensitive enough, you'd actually could see this jiggle. But what scientists have done is they've taken that jiggle and turned it into a sound that we can hear with our own ears. The sun is vibrating at lots of different frequencies. And one of the things that's pretty cool about that is we can use those vibrations in the sun to look inside the sun. We don't have straightforward ways to look inside the sun. I mean, we don't have a microscope to zoom inside the sun. So using a star or the sun's natural vibrations allows us to see inside of it. And we can see huge rivers of solar material flowing around. We are finally starting to understand the layers of the sun and the complexity. It's really cool because all of this complex motions inside the sun are in fact what generates magnetic fields inside the sun. And those magnetic fields float up to the surface and give us sunspots. And those sunspots give us solar flares and coronal mass ejections, this whole thing we call space weather. So all of these things are connected. And that simple sound is giving us a probe inside of a star. I think that's a pretty cool thing.
Isn't that cool?
I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you, our own sun.
I'd imagine
thank
that
you, Alex.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I imagine each of the sun has its own sound, each sun out there.
Absolutely. Every star is a unique radiant being.
Yeah. Reminds me of the astrophysicist that we used to know, a beautiful woman, remember, in the 90s?
Tiarella Ferenzi,
Italian scientist who recorded the sounds of space and put them into, especially stars, and put them into a synthesizer, a musical synthesizer, so that each key represented a different star system.
Yeah.
And you could play a symphony of the stars, literally.
Yes, which we were lucky enough to experience in a planetarium setting with a projection of the stars overhead. And it was just extraordinary. It was in the era of Laserium. Remember Laserium?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Ed Lance and people doing hosting these incredible space shows.
And she came to see us when we were on The Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Jay Leno.
That's right. Urella Ferenczi was in America
audience,
at that time. Right. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
That's the combination of science with art in that case, where you take some of these beautiful sounds and play with them.
I think there are many scientists who do feel it is art, because art is about taking your intelligence and your awareness and creating something that communicates to others what you're feeling and seeing and noticing about it. And when you're dealing with facts that are not super obvious, as many scientists are, then you get the opportunity to almost invent a language so that people can experience what you're experiencing. That's where science becomes art.
And that's where appreciation comes in too, because then you can appreciate something if you understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and understanding, that is the big mystery, because when you understand something, the better you understand it, the better you can communicate it. But it doesn't necessarily make you true. It makes it that you have a consistent way of viewing it. And yet, just like with physics, we have 15% of the known facts of the universe are covered by the standard model in physics. And 85% is still a mystery that is just being chucked off as black matter, right? So you have to realize knowledge is a subset of understanding.
No, we're on our way.
We're definitely trying to get there.
One planet down, 100 billion to go in the local galaxy.
Right. But science is our best guess. Yeah. You got to give it to science. It's our best guess. So important to have respect.
So speaking of respect, there are... Oh, yes. Yeah, Gregory points out it. Fiorella Terenzi. That's what you were saying.
Oh, Fiorella. Fiorella. I said Fiorella. Thank you, Gregory. Fiorella Terenzi.
Fiorella.
Dr. Fiorella Terenzi.
Yeah, she was a babe and a scientist at the same time. It's quite remarkable. Yeah. Ivan Dreyer was behind Laserium, who passed away last year. That was a very sad moment when Laserium founder died and beginning to look at music and light.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And translating light into music. And that's kind of what we're doing with the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah, photons to, what would you say, the air molecules? Audions, I was thinking. No, that's going to be sci-fi. Yes, okay, let's get down to Earth here. How about
that? Thank you, Greg, for remembering the founders and the people who contributed so much to our understanding of the world.
That's one of my favorite things was going to Griffith Park Observatory in L.A. and seeing Laserium.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting up there above the city and experiencing Pink Floyd and Laserium. Amazing.
Totally amazing.
The late 70s thing.
Yeah.
So their strange mystery here is whether or not we are sharing this planet with other intelligent species. And USA Today, not coast to coast, USA Today did a big story on Yeti footprints reported... Not by some strange investigator, but from the Indian Army.
Right? Oh, that's really funny. Because you know who else was reporting on Yetis today a little bit?
Rosie,
right, in the morning show this morning.
That's right. You were telling me about that.
That's right.
Like we have a Bigfoot Museum in Felton here.
That's right. And it is well-loved because the people at the Bigfoot Museum are so into it. And they have some real live evidence and lifetime of research. And if you want to know about Bigfoot, it's a good place to get more information.
I particularly like the big statue of the Bigfoot in front of the museum and kind of like chainsaw art at its finest.
But nevertheless, okay, let's hear about the Yeti in India.
Is it real or not? Well, in a tweet that sparked disbelief and a lot of social media jabs, the Indian Army said a team of its mountaineers spotted a mysterious footprints of the mysterious beast, the Yeti. They said the footprints were huge, huge, measuring 32 by 15 inches.
What?
32-inch foot.
That's pretty giant.
They were spotted April 9th near the base camp of Makalu on the border of Nepal and Tibet. Hmm. That's the world's fifth largest peak.
I see. Yeah. The abominable snowman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's only been sighted in that area in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a picture of a few soldiers and images with the large footprints next to them.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so you can check our links page.
So they're holding their tiny feet. That sounds like this footprint is at least 3 or 4 times bigger than anybody in the group.
It's quite impressive. go to our links page if you want to see it. drfutureshow.com, drfutureshow.com/links. And we have that USA Today link. Or go to USA Today. You'll see it. Or News Google. Or, you know, you can find these things in numerous ways these days. But anyway, check it out.
All right, Dr. Future likes to believe.
Yeah, they have a lot of pictures in the USA
Today
article.
Could just be clickbait. Could just be fun facts.
No, man, this is mainstream stuff. This is not
this is international
late night
news.
Anymore. No, this is like the glare of the day, 2:42 in the afternoon kind of news.
Okay, right. Here we are.
Yeah, not just politics anymore.
Abominable snowman is real.
Well, I guess there are politics of...
We have evidence.
If we talk to them, how do we recognize... If they turn out to be an intelligent species, maybe they were a subset of humanity that stayed in the caves in the last ice age because the last ice age in that part of the world never ended. Something like that. Right?
I see.
And then maybe it connects underground to other caves that they're aware of.
Cold weather warmer. Slows everything down.
Yeah, there's a lot
it
of stuff.
It could have slowed down their evolution.
It could be.
Many people believe that giants have been a big part of our human history, although the evidence is not very obvious. But in the past, there were many creatures that are much bigger than the ones we have now.
When I was a kid, one of my favorite episodes of Superman was The Mole Men. Parts 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Superman confronted these beings that came from the inside the earth.
Oh.
Yeah.
What happened?
You'll have to watch.
Oh. Were they good beings?
Say, we survived.
We survived? Did they survive? Did they survive their encounters with Superman?
Yeah. You know, a lot of species don't necessarily survive after hanging out with us, sadly to say.
Oh.
Yeah. But I'm not saying that's the case in this case because we really don't know. And besides, this was... fiction.
Maybe we can start rewriting our human history as a history of cooperative coexistence. You know, maybe it's possible that evolution leads to along with other species.
Well, Mr. Future, I think you're on to the idea that you can slice and dice history in many ways. And certainly the way we were taught, which was wars and connections between wars and how they change things, can be expanded upon and looked at in terms of other views. And it has been. Like, there's the women's point of view of history, there's a black's point of view of history, there's the white racist view of history.
There's
all these different ways of slicing and dicing.
Of indigenous people's view of history.
Yes.
There's many, many voices when you start adding up all the stories.
And where do you go? Will you go where your affinities lie? What kind of stories do you like to hear?
I like to hear stories where the outcome is surprising, and I do kind of like snarky, sarcastic voices, but
snarky,
I also
sarcasm.
Like happy endings.
Snarky sarcasm with a happy ending. All right, who can come up with a
satire
version of American history along those
Not
lines?
Not everybody should take themselves so seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess that would be imbued in it, too, is the seriousness of history.
Well, yeah, the seriousness of history comes from people allowing their anger to cause death and destruction of others. So you got to take it seriously. Anger can undo a lot of good.
Death kills.
Death kills. Guess what else? Time. Time ends.
Nicely killed that quarter hour. Okay, well... couple more stories before we get into a much more serious topic.
Do you believe what you see? Emotionless we, nothing is
real. All right. Welcome back. Yes, our buddy Ed Lance, we were talking during the break, he used to design planetariums for the science museums.
Mm-hmm.
And he was into laserium himself and started the Harmony Channel, which was about creating great images in the 90s.
Right.
Yeah. So now he has
the
one of the
planetarium artists of the world who have influenced our lives.
Yes.
Ed's, just a little shout out.
Ed's got a big dome down in L.A. where he does immersive media.
Right. Oh, yeah, and it is such a mecca for virtual artists, Android Jones. He works with some other very advanced talents that are doing their music videos for dome shows.
And that's the whole vision of the dome show idea, that in a dome, it replicates reality, you know, because reality around us is like a dome everywhere we look, a bubble, if you will.
Yeah.
So naturally, what you create, what goes on the surface of the bubble, and that becomes your reality. And if you have 3D spatialized sound, all the better.
Yeah.
So Ed's taken that to high levels of amazingness.
Yeah.
So if you get down to L.A.
Right. Check out the dome shows.
That's right. We'll bring Ed on soon. We'll talk more about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the cool... besides putting on the goggles that take you into virtual reality, into three-dimensional worlds that way, there's also the idea of encumberless VR, where you're not wearing anything and you're transported to another world.
Right.
You know, how do you do that?
Locations.
Projections. Of all kinds.
You immerse your entire body into a virtual reality.
Or you beam yourself somewhere else if you're advanced enough. But
right. Oh, what's the new word they're using now? Spatialized?
Spatial computing.
Spatialized.
That's the new buzzword.
Computing.
It's coming out of Silicon Valley now. Spatial computing.
Right. And that means computers are creating spaces and we can inhabit them.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk more about that in the future, too. Meanwhile, let's talk about the environment for a minute.
Okay. Always up for that.
In the positive news in the environmental world is that there's an 83-year-old Swiss entrepreneur who lives in Wyoming who donated $1 billion for the planet. Hans-Jörg Weiss, W-Y-S-S.
Well, that's nice. He obviously led a very productive life.
Well, he's notoriously media shy, and he launched and donated $1 billion to the Weiss Campaign for Nature.
Mm-hmm.
And why? What's he want to do with $1 billion? He wants to conserve 30% of the planet's land and oceans by 2030.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most ambitious project of the businessman's environmental charity, the Weiss Foundation, to date. The initiative will aim to guard twice the amount of land and ocean that is currently protected, twice as much as being protected now. He explained that plant and animal species are estimated to be disappearing at a rate of about 1,000 times faster than they were before humans arrived on the scene.
Hmm.
I guess 1 million years. Climate change is upending natural systems across the planet. Forest, fisheries, and drinking water supplies are imperiled as extractive industries chew further into the wild.
Yeah. We do need to have a conversation about the difference between extractive industries and industries that enhance and sustain nature.
Well, extraction is important because society uses that material to exist.
Sure.
So it's real, it's like food for society.
There is a food chain,
you know,
and
now,
eating other things is inherently consumptive.
Yeah, well, and ultimately you're eating your own nest, you know, if you take too much of it, it's not recycled properly.
So but one of the natural laws is you need to restore what you take so that you don't run out.
When you're growing, it's, you know, you've got to think, well, where's the new energy coming from? And I'm thinking that it could most likely come from near-Earth objects. Instead of seeing all these 19,000 rocks around our planet as dangerous, that they are a resource. They're a regular Home Depot of materials waiting for us to play with.
So your model is that we run out of food here through our extraction
and
grow some new mouths to like suck the next layer of space in so that we don't run out.
Well, we don't want to soil our own nest, eh? You know, I mean, it's better to those dead asteroids than our planet.
I'm just trying to show you there's a different way of thinking about it.
Well, there is, but meanwhile...
Nature wants you to grow in a way that is enhancing of nature. Nature doesn't want you to pig out and then leave a big turd behind and then go look for more to eat.
I mean, she does, on a small level, but at the planetary level, she wants
it to stay in balance.
But do you want a Tesla next year? Would you like to have a brand new Tesla?
How is this related?
Autonomous?
Because
it takes material resources from the planet to create something like that. It takes extraction technologies to create the batteries.
I'm not anti-extraction. I'm extraction with an eye to balance. There is a difference.
The difference is, instead of some or none, it's
the boundary is set by making sure the whole is enhanced.
Now, what do you mean by the whole? The planet or
the solar system, or the
moon, Earth,
biosphere of Earth?
The biosphere, okay, so all things that are biological.
Earth, yeah. I would say that the balance of the planet should fundamentally enhance the life forms that are here. And we should see them all as nature's experiments that have succeeded somewhat and are here to teach us something. And we should revere that and learn and preserve.
Okay, so communication with nature is one of the highest priorities we could do.
Communication with nature, appreciation of nature. We don't even have to intervene. Like this article that you're talking about, the Weiss Campaign for Nature, is coming from a philanthropist who wants the work of his life to benefit nature, to go forward to keeping parts of nature pristine the way that they have been from ancient times till now, and to allow that path of evolution without it being micromanaged by us with our monkey minds and our technological intelligence going in and shifting it all around and making it work differently.
All right, I appreciate that. And it's kind of like seeing nature as the noble forces of the universe that we should pay attention to.
And you can give it any myth you want.
No, what I'm saying,
you should preserve things that you don't understand and that have given rise to where we are.
But I'm thinking also that once we become a certain level of awareness where we are connected enough with nature to realize that there's an asteroid going to hit us, that we should do something about it, that we should, if we need to spaceships in order, if through using extractive processes to create spaceships, we should do that because those are resources that are to take us to the next step. But we will return it to nature later.
We can extract to a point, but how about this for an example?
It later because it takes energy.
What about the invasive nature of our inventions? So for instance, we've got the military experimenting in the oceans with acoustic technology that is so loud that it has never been heard in nature, and it's deafening to pods of whales. And so we've got this technology that really shows how powerful we humans are and how much we can affect the planet.
Yeah, I agree. And if we had better communications with the cetaceans, then we'd probably respect them more.
What if we use that advance, that power to advance our own sound, and if we protected nature with it? So what if we realized that whales would be affected by it, and instead of just blasting their environment with sound, we created sound-canceling headphones for them and domains where the whales could be safe from our invasiveness.
Sony, we need 1 million pairs of sound-canceling headphones for whales. I'm sure they'll hop right on it.
The point is to think about the effect that you have on the ecosystem, because it's your ecosystem. It made you. So were we talking about how monkeys, if the extinction level asteroids hadn't hit, where would dinosaurs be today? Where would monkeys be today? Like, we wouldn't be here having this conversation.
That's a late night Quora question.
Right.
If the asteroid hadn't destroyed dinosaurs, what would happen?
Right.
How would it be different today?
Right. And so I'm saying, if we don't think about the good of nature and the impact that our inventions have, then we may not be here to enjoy the future because we didn't plan to be here. We just lucked out.
Yeah.
So we've got to try and help ourselves in the future by keeping the mystery afloat.
Well,
and doing our best to help it and not hurt it.
Yes, I don't disagree with you.
Oh, good.
As far as I know.
What a relief.
What do you think I'm missing? I'm not sure what you're cautioning me about.
The extractive industry. You're gung-ho and enthusiastic about, yes, let's do it. Let's extract, extract, extract. And when we run out of resources, we'll find more. And I'm saying, there's a natural law where there's a built-in sustainable limit where you extract up to a point and then you reach that point and then you replenish. And that's how nature works. Nature is like take and give back. And nature grows things exponentially. It starts with a seed and that seed turns into billions of new seeds because they all come to fruition.
Well, I see. Here's the thing is that we actually play a role of bringing back replenishment 1,000,000-fold for nature. We have access to the galaxy. We can bring more resources to nature than you can imagine. I mean, it'd be like way beyond England getting resources from around the world in the 16th, 17th centuries, way beyond that on a planetary scale. So our deal is to give us enough resources to get into space, explore the galaxy, and we'll bring it back to our home planet in spades.
great. I'm all for
that's
that.
That's the deal we need.
And how for do living you... sustainably here on Earth, well, creating yeah. the paradise garden.
But we need a little.
We while
to,
we go
the
out,
extraction
there.
Point must continue for just a little while longer.
I'm not that's saying all Dr. don't extract. Saying. I'm saying
but
do
to return
it, with
it
wisdom,
yes. Return
wisely.
It at the right time. I think it would be good to make that deal with Mother Nature.
All right, we're going to continue this negotiation
all right, thank
during
you.
The break. All right, Dr. Future Show
who
here
am
on KSEO.
Exactly here?
I'm your best friend of Mother Gaia.
Thank you.
Love you.